What's up, Jelly Bellies? Before we get started today, I just wanted to make sure you knew about CoreUltrasound.com. This is an incredible resource run by our own Jalen Avila and dear friend of the show, Ben Smith. There are countless resources there, videos, podcasts, courses, and question banks for you to learn what you need to know about point-of-care ultrasound. So make sure you check it out at CoreUltrasound.com.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. I'm Mike Pratz. Today with a special edition podcast, I'm very excited about our guests today. So I'm going to let them, without further ado, introduce themselves.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for allowing us to join this awesome podcast. My name is Dr. Adara Landry. I'm an emergency medicine physician at the Brigham and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, ultrasound trained, and now sort of branching into the craft of writing.
My name's Dr. Risa Lewis. I sometimes refer to myself as Dr. Risa E. Lewis. I like putting in that little middle initial with a period. I'm a left-handed vegetarian espresso lover, and I start with that because, Mike, that's how you and I are connected. It really started over independent coffee shops and espresso. In my free time, I'm an emergency medicine physician, professor of emergency medicine, currently at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, as an adjunct. I am a podcaster, the Visible Voices podcast. I'm a healthcare designer, and I, too, am an author.
Incredible. I'm so excited to have you both here. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm so happy to discuss your book, Microskills, which you were so kind to send me an advance copy of that. I'm grateful that I have gotten the chance to dig into it. I'm not finished, but what I've read so far, I've really enjoyed. And Risa, I have to say that I also identify as left-handed, and I think that there is something to that that really shapes a person.
What do you think it is?
You know, the trials and tribulations of living in a world not designed for you.
All the time. I walk into doors the wrong way. Whenever something doesn't work as I'm navigating my daily living, I'm like, it's because I'm lefty. But I've always liked being left-handed because it's unusual and it's different. And I think I've loved that aspect to navigating being a physician. And the being different also, I think, speaks to why we connect as emergency physicians who decided to do ultrasound when maybe other people weren't doing it.
I love this. I'm a parent to a left-handed child, so I am very happy to be hearing all of this, that they will be okay. They will be okay.
Oh, yeah, they will definitely be okay. I have three right-handed kids, and I don't want to say I was disappointed, but I would have relished the opportunity to guide them in that path.
Mm.
Risa, we've been on podcasts together in the past. You're a longtime supporter of Ultrasound Gel since the beginning, a mentor to many people in the field of ultrasound. And Adara, as well, I know that you've done tons of mentoring, lots of work available on the internet, seeing great interviews and things that you've written for really remarkable outlets. So I'm so appreciative to hear the wisdom that you have to share. And it seems to me like you took a lot of the discussion and consolidated it into this book. So let's get into this discussion. Tell me about Microskills at the Advent. What inspired you to write it? Where did this come from?
Well, I think, you know, it started small, which is the perfect way you should start any large project. And so it first started with just Risa and I getting to know working with each other. And we started with articles. We had met each other through the field of ultrasound. I remember specifically us hanging out in Ireland at a conference and chit-chatting over beer. Actually, I don't think we were drinking beer, but we were there at the brewery. And we were talking just about career development, and I loved Risa's energy. And that's such an important part when it comes to picking someone to work with. Risa has great energy. And so we started writing articles, very small projects about the workplace, and we loved it. And as we were thinking about the bigger goal here, I mean, a book just made sense. I've always wanted to write a book. Risa always wanted to write a book. I think there are a lot of people out there who are like, when I retire, I'm going to write a book. But we were like, let's do it now. Like, now is the time. And luckily, we had experienced writing together before we took on this massive, massive endeavor, because you really need to know your writing partner. You really need to trust your writing partner. And I felt like we had that established relationship.
I can add that, so Adara and I both emergency medicine, ultrasound, and I remember we were at this conference in Dublin, and we talked more than we had. And like most things of the recent period, COVID really changed everything. And I found more time at home. I had some shifts in the emergency department, but much of the care had gone to telehealth. So I was doing telehealth shifts. And I really felt compelled to make a difference. And so, you know, one of the things that came to mind was like podcast. Maybe it's time to launch a podcast. The other thing is, as Dara shared, we started writing. And you really don't know what it's like to write with someone until you start writing that with that someone. And Adara came to me and said, you know, Risa, I want to write a book. And I'll be honest, actually, that had not been on my radar. And she said, what do you think? And I said, wow, you know, I believe in growth mindset. I'm up for new things. I'm ambitious and I don't have a problem saying it. Yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to Adara because from my recollection, she brought the idea to me, having watched as I had that our successes with writing articles together. And then I think, you know, going back, I had always identified as I'm math science, I'm not writing. And there had been enough experience with writing for the academic literature, as I like to say it, and then moving into the lay press, and I was like, okay, I think we can do this. This is fun. And around me, I had an increasing number of physician authors that I'm like, okay, doctors do this. Let's do this.
That's fantastic. And I'm sure I speak for a lot of my audience, and I can also speak for myself that I'm really interested in that process because I like writing. And a lot of us, I'm sure, are creative minded and also have experience writing on the academic side, as you say. So what's that transition like? Let's say if I'm a person who's only just cranked out research articles my whole life, but I'm interested in writing in other venues. Is that an easy transition? Are there challenges or things to think about?
I'm going to let Adara answer this, but let me say, perhaps we've actually considered this topic and have a draft of an article on this exact question.
We do. We do have an article on how to write for these sorts of outlets that are coming, that will be coming out soon. We write well, I think, because we come from a place where we are interested in our personal struggles, our personal journey. And a lot of the people who I meet who are like, I hate writing, it's really hard. When I ask them and I dive deeper into it, they just aren't writing about their personal journey enough. And they're writing about, like, let's say, academic problems or academic curiosities, but it's not necessarily a personal issue. So when we wrote this article for Nature on why we should not have 7 a.m. meetings or early a.m. meetings, it was definitely from a personal perspective of how that issue affected us and how we wanted that system changed. And so once we started just to realize the power of really launching our writing journey from like our own personal issues and things that we want to be restructured or reconsidered, it's much easier than like picking a project or a topic that is, let's say, assigned to us that we're not really that curious about to begin with.
Storytelling. And I think that's what this is about, is telling personal stories. I shared, you know, when I gave that TEDMED talk, and I say that because it was ultrasound. It was 2014. Before that, I used to give PowerPoints. These were maybe they were keynotes. But the bottom line is it was bullet points. And there wasn't a lot of RISA in there. There was a lot of quoting of literature, but there wasn't a lot of RISA. And when they prepped you for that talk, you worked with a chief storyteller. I'm like, what do you mean? Someone makes a living being a storyteller? I had no idea. And then progress that through right before we pressed record today, Adara was speaking about the moth. I started attending storytelling events and being blown away, and you understand drawing people in with the emotion, and you realize that if you're having an experience, you're probably not the only one in the world. So as Adara said, we definitely come from this place of let's share our experience. Let's share what we've learned, and maybe you can adopt what we've learned, the practices, the workarounds, the solutions, the being better sooner, earlier to be better at work.
I just want to add something really quick that's super important. We are talking about idea generation for writing, right? Like, how do you come up with the idea, the topic? That's the fun part. That's the brainstorm. The actual process of writing, though, you have to be much more comfortable with the editing, the kneading, the strike through, and the track changes all over. So one of the things that we are very comfortable with is the editing process. So if I send Risa an early draft for an article or vice versa, and it comes back to me with like strike through everywhere, you know, like draft edits everywhere, every single sentence marked up. That's reset, by the way. that's love. Like that is attention, right? And that's someone who's really caring about your article. And I love that way more than just looks good, because I mean, you really need to see that time, that energy put into something to make it better. And for someone to really spend that time editing is like a sign of their investment in you. And so when you're working with someone, I want to just normalize for the reader, for the listeners here, that you really want someone who's going to deep dive into your piece. And if you're writing alone, you really want to do it yourself. But like we change, I mean, we can spend time on just one word in a sentence and we're thinking about this for days. Like, oh, what's the best word for this? We keep going back and forth. But that nuance really helps us.
I've heard so much important content so far already in thinking about the process. One, you've mentioned your collaborator is incredibly important, that you really connect and you're on the same page in terms of what you're trying to accomplish and the creativity and just kind of your personalities meshing together in a productive and inspiring way. So that sounds like a great pointer for anybody that's interested in this type of thing. And then the project, you kind of mentioned that you have to find something that's passionate about. And I think we've all read things that you can tell the person writing them is not incredibly passionate about it. It doesn't really tap into that inner interest that they are curious about or that they actually care deeply about. But it sounds like you two have found that thing in your writing, and I think it shows a lot. Can you talk a little bit about how you go from having that inner feeling, the desire, the passion for something, and then finding your voice in the writing itself?
Mike, thank you for queuing up actually my ability to tell you about one of the pieces that Adara and I wrote, because we knew we were onto something about finding that writing partner, finding that productivity partner. So because people would come up at the end mm-hmm. of a talk, Adara was getting this a lot. Like, how did you and Risa connect? How did you know it'd work? Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, we should write this. We should write about what it is that we think works about us. And so it's called 6 Things to Consider When Choosing a Business Partner. It's in Fast Company. We were so psyched because, again, this is this translation of personal experience, professional experience to trying to help the world and put content out to the world.
Yeah, people were always asking, wondering, like, how are Risa and I able to put out so much content? Because they have had experiences where they might have tried to collaborate with someone else and it didn't work, or they just are unsure how to even find a partner to collaborate with. As far as finding your voice, you know, if I were to look at some of our earlier pieces, I'm going to guess that they were safer than how our book is a lot more raw and vulnerable and detailed about what has actually happened to us. There's a lot more revealed. But if you were to look at some of our earlier pieces, I would say they're a little bit more guarded as far as like what our personal journey has been. Would you agree with that, Risa? Like our fuel efficient mentoring, we didn't like pour into ourselves, our own personal journey in that Harvard Business Review article. So I would say finding your voice takes time. We sort of started with the probably more of the objective writing skills, like how to be clear, how to be crisp, how to be succinct and give really specific strategies. That's very important to us, that it feels specific, because we have read so much in the business self-help type of literature that feels general, that feels like it's assuming a lot of the knowledge that I may or may not have. And so when we write, we try to make sure it's very specific and clear. And I think once we got that skill down, it was much easier to start bringing in that vulnerable aspect to our writing.
There is a component of, you know, I will say that I've loved aging. You become more comfortable with yourself. You're good in your skin. And I'm using that as an analogy here, listeners, for writing. You become more comfortable the more you do it, and things kind of simmer. And Adara has used the word knead. We love that concept of kneading dough. So time, patience, and I think it's not just this isolated exercise of writing. I'm a huge reader. I edit. I do a lot of like medical journal editing, and I certainly used to do more in the past than I do now. But like all these writing adjacent exercises, even walking in nature, even making sure you're taking care of yourself, you know, cue chapter 1, micro skills for self-care. Like, all that stuff sets you up for being a better writer who's more in tune with her own voice.
I just want to, like, double down on the editing part. Like, editing other people's writing is very helpful. I'm also a decision editor for an academic journal, and I feel like just in the last 7 or 8 months, that has really helped my own writing with thinking about how to make someone else's paper stronger, and also, like, reading the reviewer's edits, too, and thinking, like, oh, I had never considered that. One last thing. I know we have so much to share, but one last thing that I want to say is it's really important to share your article with other people as, like, a field test early on. And we don't do that much with academic writing. Like, think about the last time you wrote a research paper and you, like, sent it out to 10 people, right? But when Risa and I write stuff, we send it out. Like, our book has been sent out to so many people from our networks to get information. And same thing with our articles. Like, we send those out and we ask people very specific questions. Not like, what do you think? But like, is this offensive? Is this clear? What do you think about paragraph 2? Should we move it? So you want to be specific. You want to really guide that feedback.
I'll add about circling this back to ultrasound and, you know, being cognizant of our audience. And similar to what Adara shared with editing for medical journals, that was how, when I first started doing this writing journey, it was in academic emergency medicine. It was ultrasound articles. And by being an editor, you see what is publishable. You get ideas for methodologies for your own research projects. You're like, oh, wow, you can write that? Oh, wow, you can say that? And just one little insider scoop regarding reading other editors' comments, you also realize if you've been the recipient of mean, criticizing reviews, you're like, oh, wow, that's really rude. And it kind of, I think, actually, hopefully makes you be kinder in your reviews.
This is really great content. And I could talk about writing all day because I have a lot of personal interest in it. But I think it's gone on long enough that we have to actually talk about the content of this book. So let's get into it. Can you describe what is this book? What are micro skills? And who do you think this book is for?
Ooh, Risa, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll start with some broad strokes. This is the category of business self-help. And I'll be honest, I didn't really realize that was a category until we started working with a literary agent and a publisher who said, oh, this is business self-help. I'm like, oh. And as Adara shared, it turns out I read lots of these kinds of books. We're talking about leadership. We're talking about managing people. We're talking about communication. You're thinking about the books that you see when you're in the airport. And we do look at these books even more intently now as we've been preparing this magnum opus. So, business self-help book, and we wrote the book that we wish we had been given to read when we started in the workforce, when we started our careers. And to be clear, this is not a book just for doctors or for healthcare. This is not a book just for emergency physicians, nor just for women. This is a business self-help book to help people navigate the workplace. Now, when you're preparing a proposal, you have to give what we call comp titles, comparative titles, and what we gleaned is a lot of books tell you what to do. They don't tell you how to do it. So our approach is to break the process down into steps, digestible, tangible, build upon each other steps to help get better in terms of skills, in terms of traits, in terms of navigating your workplace, no matter your industry. There are 10 chapters. And I'm going to pause right there and hand the baton to Adara.
Yeah, there are 10 chapters. I would say this book is very comprehensive. That is intentional. We really didn't want this book to just be about communication because someone who's, you know, early in their career, someone who's feeling lost, it's probably a holistic issue that they really want to address. Like, how do I just fit into the workplace? I feel like I'm lost. I feel like I don't have anyone supporting me. I want to be an expert. How do I become an expert? And so we have 10 chapters. I won't list them all, but I would say that they're comprehensive. It goes from self-help to learning the culture of your workplace, to navigating conflict, to figuring out what your next steps are. And we wanted to really make it a fully inclusive resource for folks who are just like, how do I get better at work? Like, why does it seem like everyone else is succeeding? Everyone else is moving forward. They have this playbook of inside information and I don't. And you know, I think that comes from a personal place for both of us. Yes, we are physicians. Yes, we are both Harvard trained. And yes, we have also felt like we have been left behind at various points of our career. And so it can happen no matter where you are, no matter what you do, this feeling of like, it seems like everyone else is succeeding more than I am or more than I want to. I think we really wanted this book to be for early career professionals, but we have found that people at all stages can relate to this because it's not like something that just happens the day you start your first job. You can have these checkpoints where you reassess and reevaluate where you are and you're like, oh, actually, I do need help.
Yeah, and I can speak from my experience in reading it so far that there's so many pearls of wisdom that I'm learning from you, but also other things that I wish I had known so much earlier that if I had, you know, you have to learn some things the hard way, unfortunately, and that means experiencing either discomfort or embarrassment or dragging behind. And, you know, sometimes that is a valuable tool in learning, but it is certainly nice to have it all laid out for a reference and to understand how this is so immediately applicable. I think that this is valuable to anybody that does anything, frankly, because it's, like you said, so comprehensive and covering so many different topics from caring for yourself or how to deal with your emails, how to get tasks accomplished, that it seems to me that this could serve to make anybody's life easier and more enjoyable in their work, but also get to that next level that you're hoping to achieve.
And we want people to do this quickly. Like, that is also something that's very important to us. We wanted a book that felt like it was immediately actionable. Like, we didn't want the advice to be, go get a master's and MBA and you can get promoted, right? Like, that's not a quick solution. And so we really try to make things very, very, very tangible, actionable. And that's why we have the tagline for the book, which is buy this book on a Friday, better at your job on Monday, because we do think that as you are reading it, you're going to quickly get better.
You know, we mentioned that there's a very broad amount of content covering so many different topics, but I loved that you opened the book with these truths. You mentioned three important things, and you tie this back at the end of the book as well. Time can only be spent. The world is not equal. Learning is limitless if accessible. So tell me about those three points and how you feel they're so integral to the philosophy of the book.
I'll start with the time piece. You know, it's an emergency medicine / many years of training lesson that we all learn. There is certain currency that you can put in the bank and save. There's certain currency that's spent. And the way we envision and think about and know time to be is it can only be spent. And this is also something that you gain with age, is you have decision-making capacity regarding how and with whom you spend your time. And our goal, out of respect for ourselves and out of respect for our readers, was that we want them to appreciate time as a currency and that it can only be spent. And also that kind of is threaded through the book of being respectful of the reader's time to get them where they need to be faster, going back to that efficiency of the read.
Yeah. And I think, when we're thinking about the world not being equal, there's so many examples of how that could be true. I think in the workplace, I would say the first time I really stopped and paused about this was when I was leading a mentoring program when I was the assistant residency director. And everyone was assigned, when they entered residency, one advisor. And yet there were people who came in with many different skills. Some had already had a huge cohort of mentors and collaborators they've been working with, and some did not, right? And so it sort of revealed to me that the starting point for all of us is not the same. Some of us are going to have parents who are professionals, or they're going to have access to funds, money that can allow them to travel to conferences or do away rotations when they're applying for residency. I mean, all these sorts of things that can really leverage their ability to get whatever their goal is. And so I think we wanted to address that. We know that the people who are holding the book and reading the book, they're not all going to be from the same starting point. And the reason why we bring this up is because we try to remove any assumptions that we might have about the reader. And that's why we give such granular strategic advice, is because we don't know where the person is when they're reading the book. And because the world is not equal, we sort of assume that we're just going to teach as much as we can so that there's not many big gaps.
Adara really captures the essence of not making assumptions. We couldn't possibly account for everything and everyone, but we certainly tried. We certainly tried because, again, reflecting back at our comp titles, many made so many assumptions. Access, resources, prior knowledge, and we tried to really break it down to basics of like, you don't know how to access this, here's where you start. And that goes to sort of the underlying truth number three is that knowledge, and this is, you know, many, many people, many, many cultures, many, many communities value education, but you have to access that education. And so we wanted to provide a source of access in this book to really just get people going on all the different parts of the workplace.
I love that. Yeah, what a valuable resource you've created with that.
Okay, I was going to share this story that sort of, I think, summarizes all three of these truths into a very clear point. Reese and I have both had this story. I'm going to tell it from my perspective, but she has had this story too. When I was maybe 2 or 3 years out of residency, I noticed my peers, amazing people, were just moving. I mean, the slope of their curve was like straight up, it felt. And they were getting large grants. They were publishing. They were speaking at national conventions, all these sorts of things. And I was happy with where I was, but I noticed that I wasn't really moving in that direction, right? And I definitely wasn't moving at their speed. And so during one of my shifts, I asked one of my colleagues, I said, how are you getting all of these things so fast and in such high numbers? Like, how is this possible that you're being nominated for all of these awards and all of these projects and all of that? And we talked specifically about his like most recent award that he had received, and he had received a few more prior to that. And I said, how did you find people to nominate you? And he said, no, just so you know, like, I write my own letters of recommendation. Like, I draft those myself. And I go up to people and I say, hey, I've already drafted the letter. Can you change this? And I really want to go up for this project or whatever. Like, I don't wait for them to come to me, Adara, which is what I was thinking. That's the process. Like, I was assuming, you know, how they send out all these like SAEM awards and AWIM awards. And I was like, oh, I really hope someone thinks about me one day. I mean, to myself, I might think that kind of thing, right? But I would have never thought that people actually raise their hand and say, hey, I've actually done a lot of work that sort of meets this criteria. I would love to actually like be represented. And so Reese and I has, you know, we both have gone through this, and maybe you have as well, but just like this small nugget of truth that like everyone knows, it's a secret, but no one talks about it. And no one talks about it, but like people do it, which is drafting your own letter of recommendation. And that sort of speaks to like time is only spent. Like, you can't wait forever for your career to take off. Like, you own your career, and the world is not equal. As in, like, some of us have a network of people who can nominate us and who are willing to be sponsors, and some of us don't have that network accessible to us. And then learning, this is like just the skill set of like, oh, if I had known that I could draft my own letter, that would have been really helpful for me, because I would have had maybe more courage. I wouldn't have felt like I'm a burden to ask someone to help me.
Hence the playbook. And, you know, I make a joke that a lot of times in the workplace in medicine, you know, people make sports references. I'm like, I can make sports references, but this goes back to the playbook. You know, if you think about football, they have got the playbook. And we have had this experience that somehow everybody else was given the playbook and we weren't given a copy. We weren't given that copy to read. So we wanted to write the playbook for people. We wanted to give them the knowledge that we wish we had been given. Adara's illustration is excellent. Like, you know, I have had so many of those moments where I was like, oh my gosh, that's the way this works? I was waiting. I'll give the example of writing, you know, today's theme of this book. When I was in residency, I was not on any writing projects. I don't think I was on any research projects. And I thought somehow someone had determined that I wasn't a good writer. Now, meanwhile, no one had looked at my writing samples. And I saw all my other colleagues seeming writing papers, getting abstracts. And I was like, you know, is it me? Is it me? And then you realize that like, that's just not the way things are done. And so once you know and learn the rules, you don't have to play. That's the other thing. Adara and I decided to do this for parts of our professional lives, this academic emergency medicine route. It's not for everybody, and you don't need to do it. But as you said, Mike, this is not just about academic emergency medicine. This is not just about medicine. This is about virtually anything. you know, how to comprehensively approach almost anything.
And I'm sure a lot of people connect with those situations that you're describing. And in fact, that reminds me that one thing I really enjoyed about reading the book is those anecdotes that you put in about your own experiences. And it really explains why these are important skills to learn. And it seems that you have done the hard work of sometimes describing your own failures or problems that you've had to now coming to this wisdom that you can share with everybody else. Now, as I think we've made clear, I think this book is great for almost anybody. But one thing that caught my eye, and especially since we're all ultrasound trained, is chapter 5 describes being a subject matter expert. There's a lot of great ideas on there, how to navigate into this world of academics and teaching and research. Can you talk a little bit about some of the pointers that you have for that audience?
Yeah, you know, some of these themes and some of these chapter titles, they seem so global. Like, how can you break it down? And definitely Adair and I were challenged in, like, how do we break this down into pieces? How do we explain it? Like, somehow, you know, Adair has expertise as a medical educator and as an ultrasound specialist. Somehow I have expertise, but like, how does someone get deemed that? Where does that come from? So it took a lot of conversation and it took a lot of thinking about the paths that led up, the pieces, the steps that led up to being where we are. So that chapter that you mentioned, developing subject matter expertise, we started thinking about where we started and where we are now. And so there are different elements that we discuss in the chapter. And Mike, as you outlined, each chapter has micro skills that we describe. We start the micro skill with a vignette, a personal story, and Adair and I rotate back and forth with different stories, real stories of our own experience in the workplace. And then we, for the reader, talk about why the micro skill is important. We talk about why the micro skill might be difficult to acquire. And then we talk about the critical actions to gaining, to incorporating, to learning that micro skill. And I think that's a little bit of a shout out to our emergency medicine experience where when you go for the oral board, you have to know the critical actions. But These are translatable concepts that everybody understands. So for example, becoming a subject matter expert, one thing is deciding what you want to be an expert in. You know, where do you want to grow and go? Another aspect to developing expertise once you've thought about what you want to be an expert in is becoming known. And how do you become known? And part of that is networking. Part of that is writing. Part of that is speaking. Part of that is joining organizations. And then a third piece of becoming a subject matter expert is sort of what we talked about earlier with mentoring. Like when you get to a position of mentoring and sponsoring in that subject matter, building your network and bringing other people along.
Yeah. And, you know, I think my favorite in the list that we cover is benchmarks, setting benchmarks and moving towards them. In the business worlds, they will set like goals for their quarters. You know, we want to have this many dollars in sales. We want to have this many new customers. And in academia, we're not like, oh, I want to give 5 lectures this quarter, right? Like that's not how I've ever been taught to think about my career. And so, you know, in the book, we talk about having measurable goals. Like, how will you know that you're moving towards expertise? How many papers are you trying to publish this year? What number of positions are you trying to get on a national level, like in committees, through SCUF or whatever? How many new people are you trying to bring into your network? You know, I had a goal this year for 2023 to try to meet 23 new people. So I've been actually like keeping track of that in my email, like how many different conversations I've been having. And so that's like a new thing that I'm measuring. And these are like meaningful meetings, by the way, not just like cursory, but like really trying to meet someone. And that's a benchmark for me as far as building my network. And so that intentionality is really important. And I had never considered that, as simple as it is, until like in the last few years. Like, oh, I should really try to keep track of my progress. Probably with Risa, because when we started writing, we have a spreadsheet that lists all of our like pitches that we have made, how many of them have been accepted and by whom, what are our future pitches. So we actually have a pretty detailed tracker for all of our writing goals.
Do you want to name any names in your 23 for 23?
I hope maybe I can be the next one since we just met today.
Yeah, I think you're like number 16.
Yes. All right. Getting down to the wire here.
Yeah.
Well, Any closing thoughts or other advice? I mean, this has been fantastic. I love talking to you too, and it's been illuminating and enjoyable. Anything else you would like to share, either about your experiences writing the book or the content of the book?
I'll start by saying, you know, Seth Godin, who is someone I read, I've spoken with him. He has a book that talks about knowing when to quit and take things off your plate. Mm. And he has many sage sayings and concepts. So I think we as academic emergency physicians, I'll say I was firmly brainwashed academic, you know, there's this concept of putting more on the plate, putting more on the plate, putting more on the plate. And I think the more that you can take off your plate, the more you can quit things. Mm. And it feels so weird because we don't quit. But if you quit and create space on your plate, that will allow you to think and self-reflect and figure out what you want to do. And this manifestation of a book is completely in the ability of every single listener and anybody that wants to write and have a book. I truly believe that. But you have to allow yourself space and time to sort of drill down to what you really want to do. The other thing that I will say about Seth Godin is he says, make art and just put it out in the world. And we started the conversation by talking about writing and talking about finding your voice and how that changes over time. But I think focusing less on perfection and just focusing on getting things out there moves you along and allows you growth and comfort for whatever task, whatever project, whatever goal you're working on.
Risa, I don't know if you're religious, but you just took us to church. That was good. That was good.
I agree. I mean, that was some deep truth.
That was deep. That hit me, even though I've heard it before. That hit me again.
That was very profound. I really appreciate that. I'm going to think about that for a while.
For me, thinking about navigating work as a skill set that can be learned is really important. Like, it's not just who you are intrinsically. It's all just a collection of skills that can be learned. I think, you know, if I had known that a little bit earlier, I might have engaged more with my career earlier on. Like, I didn't really start thinking about it until later in residency. But like, you know, medical school, I could have definitely been more than just a student. I could have actually tried to network and build a community there. I would say first, just thinking about developing yourself as a skill that can be learned is a mindset change for some people. And then the other thing is not to be intimidated by large goals. And, you know, we all have those, and I think they're great. But if you break down your large goals into smaller, measurable steps, it's much easier to move towards those. If you have a large ambition, right, like you want to be CEO of a hospital or CMO of a hospital, like that's a great goal. Now it's time to count backwards and say, what are the small steps that I need to start taking today to get me there in 5-10 years? And recognizing that you are the person to drive this. No one, we say this in the book, no one's coming to save your career. And I don't mean that to discourage you, but I mean that like we all have our own personal obligations and demands. And it's not that someone's not supporting you. It's just that if you take full responsibility of like making sure things happen, that is the best, I think, thought process on how you can move things forward versus relying on someone you work with to really be the driving force.
Wonderful. Well, I have to thank you so much for talking today because I really appreciate the gravity of this undertaking, the incredible amount of work that you've done. I actually probably can't appreciate it fully having not undergone it myself, but I really am grateful for it. Now, what's the best way for people to get a hold of this book or contact you if they're interested in talking about this stuff more?
Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact is available for pre-order wherever you buy books. Yes, that is bookshop.org. Yes, that is Amazon. You can check us out on Goodreads, where we love a very, very, very positive review after you read it, of course, and truly value the content. Adair and I are on all socials.
We have personal websites. You can reach us there too. Adair Landry, MD.
Nice. We'll be happy to put those links in the show notes as well. Well, a big shout out to Adair and Risa, and I really loved having you on the show. Thanks so much for your time today. by MicroSkills. Check it out, and I hope it's beneficial to you just as it was to me.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
Feel free to check out those show notes on ultrasoundgel.org. Until next time, I'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel, more
ultrasound gel podcast.
I genuinely enjoyed that.
Samesies.